Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Stop by Sherwin-Williams and get 30% off select paints and stains June 13th through the 23rd. It's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Refresh your home inside and out with colors that make every space feel brand new. From cozy interiors to stunning exteriors, we've got the perfect shade for your next project. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild. Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Arr, fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You're listening to the Blake Winchester Loves America, the most podcast show on the Freedom Flame Podcast Network. This isn't just another podcast. It's a battle cry. A battle cry in the war for America's soul. Blake Winchester doesn't just love America, he's here to save it. If you're not ready for hard truths and even harder consequences, turn back now.
Merry Christmas, folks. Welcome to the Blake Winchester Loves America the Most podcast, where today we're celebrating the greatest holiday ever invented, Christmas. Now, you might think you know the story of Christmas. Angels singing, shepherds in the fields, a young couple trying to find a place for their miracle baby to be born. It's a tale as old as time. But what if I told you that the nativity story has a lot more in common with modern America than you might think? You see, Christmas isn't just a story about faith. It's a story about resilience, safety, and the fight for a better future. And today, I want to talk about something that isn't often discussed when it comes to the nativity, the journey. Let's go back to that first Christmas night. Mary and Joseph are making their way to Bethlehem. Why? Because the government forced them to. A census, bureaucracy at its finest. So they're on the road, no choice in the matter, walking miles and miles with Mary about to give birth. And when they get there, no room at the inn. They're turned away. Rejected, forced to settle for a stable, an afterthought at best, an insult at worst. Now, let's think about that in today's terms. Imagine the Holy Family making that journey now. No room at the inn? Sounds like the modern housing crisis to me. Forced to flee later to Egypt? That's the story of so many people today, running from violence, persecution, or poverty. But here's where things get interesting, folks, because I think with the right leadership, that story could have gone differently. Enter Donald J. Trump. Picture it. Trump sees this young couple walking down the road, struggling to find a place to stay. What does he do? Does he turn them away? Of course not. He pulls up in a gold-plated limousine, rolls down the window, and says, "Mary Joseph, get in. I've got a suite waiting for you at the Trump Bethlehem Tower." And folks, it's not just any suite. We're talking the finest accommodations. Silk sheets, gold cribs, room service on demand. No stable, No hay, no manger. Baby Jesus isn't born among animals. He's born in luxury, as befits the King of Kings. And you know what else Trump does? He makes sure they're safe. No fleeing to Egypt in the dead of night. No worrying about King Herod sending soldiers after them. Trump builds a wall, metaphorically, of course, around Bethlehem, keeping the Holy Family secure. Now, some of you might say, Blake, that's ridiculous. Trump wasn't there. How could he have helped? And to that I say, it's not about Trump literally being there. It's about what he represents: strength, safety, and prosperity. It's about imagining a world where leadership doesn't leave people like Mary and Joseph out in the cold. Because let's face it, the Holy Family's story is one of vulnerability. They were at the mercy of others, dependent on the kindness of strangers. Trump's America, that's a place where people can stand strong, where they're given the tools to succeed. No stables, no running, just security and opportunity. And here's where it gets even more important, folks. We talk a lot about borders these days, about who gets in and who stays out. But let's flip the script for a moment. What if Trump's policies had been in place back then? What if Egypt, instead of welcoming the Holy Family, had said, "Sorry, we're full. No room for you here." See what I mean? Borders matter, but so does compassion. Trump understood this balance better than anyone. You build strong borders to protect your people, but you also create systems to welcome those in need. You make sure they contribute, that they add value, that they're part of the solution, not the problem. Imagine Trump sitting down with Mary and Joseph at a big, beautiful table. He says, "Look, I'm not just going to let you in. I'm going to help you thrive. Joseph, I've got a construction gig lined up for you. Mary, you've got options too. And for baby Jesus, he's got a future in leadership. I can see it now. The savior of the world and a branding genius." That's what Christmas is about, folks. It's about creating a world where everyone has a shot at greatness. And Trump, in his own way, tried to make that a reality for America. He believed in people, in their potential. He knew that with the right support, anyone could rise to the occasion, even in a stable, even in a manger. So as you sit by your Christmas tree today, think about the Holy Family and what they went through. But also, think about what could have been, how their story might have changed with the right leadership. Because at its core, Christmas is about hope. And hope, my friends, is what great leaders inspire. Now, folks, let me take you back, way back, to that first Christmas. Imagine it, Bethlehem, a little town bustling with people for the census, the stars shining bright in the night sky, the air crisp and filled with the sound of sheep bleating and camels grunting. And there she is, Mary, young, radiant, full of grace, and carrying the literal savior of the world, a true picture of divine beauty. Now, let's just say, hypothetically, if old Blake Winchester had been alive back then, I would have done things a little differently. I mean, Joseph, sure, he's a decent guy, but let's call it like it is. He's a carpenter, a humble craftsman, respectable, yes, but not exactly a mover and shaker. Meanwhile, Mary, she's a queen, a divine vessel chosen by God himself. A woman like that deserves to be treated like royalty, and if I'd been there, I'd have made sure she knew it. Picture this. I'm walking through Bethlehem, taking in the sights when I see Mary. She's sitting outside the stable, probably trying to catch her breath after the long journey. And Joseph? He's inside, whittling something, trying to make a wooden cradle for baby Jesus. Sweet, sure, but practical. Predictable. You know the type. That's when I step in. I tip my hat, if I had one, and say, "Mary, you've been through so much. You're carrying the Son of God, and you deserve a break. Why don't you let me take you out for a nice dinner? You've earned it. And Joseph? He's clueless. Go ahead, Mary, he'd say. I've got work to do here. Because that's the kind of guy he is, always focused on the task at hand, not realizing the diamond he's got sitting right next to him. So I take Mary to the finest little tavern in Bethlehem. Candlelit table, fresh bread, a nice jug of wine, or grape juice, if she preferred. I'd listen to her talk about the angel's visit, her worries about raising the Messiah, and I'd nod along, saying, Mary, you're incredible, truly. Not just anyone could do what you're doing. Meanwhile, Joseph's back in the barn, probably sanding down the edges of a feeding trough. That's the difference, folks. Joseph's thinking about utility. I'm thinking about appreciation. And don't get me wrong, I wouldn't push too hard. I'd keep it respectful, but I'd make sure Mary knew she had options. Maybe I'd say something like, you know, Mary, it's amazing what you're doing, but it's a shame you have to carry so much weight on your shoulders. You deserve someone who can take care of you, someone who can really step up and make you feel like the queen you are. I'd plant the seed, folks, subtly, gently. I'd never outright suggest she leave Joseph. That's not my style, but I'd make her think. Blake, she might say, you're so kind, so understanding. And I'd smile and say, I just know how to recognize greatness when I see it. And let's face it, folks, Joseph was probably a great guy, but was he manly enough? Was he assertive? Did he have the presence to match Mary's divine role? I mean, while he's out there making chairs and tables, I'd be strategizing, thinking about how to build a life worthy of her and her miraculous child. Maybe, just maybe, Mary would start to wonder. What if there's more? She might think. Not in a sinful way, of course. Just curiosity, just appreciation for a man who saw her for the extraordinary woman she was. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I'd break up the Holy Family. But if I were alive back then, you can bet Mary would have known she had someone in her corner. Someone who wasn't just focused on building cradles, but on building her up. Now listen, folks, let's be honest. Joseph? Great guy. Humble carpenter. Did the best he could under the circumstances. But was he manly enough to handle the role of being Jesus' earthly father? I mean, let's call it like it is. The man gets told by an angel that his fiancée is pregnant with the Son of God. And what's his first move? He quietly considers breaking off the engagement. That's not exactly a strong start, is it? Where's the grit, the fire, the I'm going to step up and be the best dad the Messiah has ever seen attitude? Now, let's imagine for a second that it was me in Joseph's place. Oh, you bet things would have been different. First off, if I got that angelic announcement, I wouldn't have hesitated for a second. I'd have stood up, puffed out my chest, and said, all right, God, you chose me, and I'm not going to let you down. Let's do this. That's what a real man does. He doesn't waver, doesn't second guess. He takes the responsibility head on and owns it. And let's talk about being manly. Joseph? He was a carpenter, sure. Respectable trade, but it's not exactly inspiring, is it? He's out there sanding wood and building stools, while Mary's carrying the literal savior of the world. Meanwhile, if it were me, I'd be out hunting, gathering, building not just a crib, but a fortress for baby Jesus. I'd be making sure no one, not Herod, not a single Roman soldier, would get within 10 miles of my family. And let's face it, folks, Joseph's approach was a little too passive. He followed Mary to Bethlehem, but did he demand better accommodations? Did he knock on every door and say, hey, my wife is about to give birth to the Son of God, and she deserves better than a barn? No! He just went along with it. Now, if I were there, I'd have marched right up to that innkeeper, looked him dead in the eye, and said, listen, pal, you're giving up that last room, or you're explaining to God himself why you made his son sleep in a pile of hay. And let's not even start on the wise men. Joseph just stood there while they handed over gifts like gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Myrrh? What's Mary supposed to do with that? If it were me, I'd have said, gentlemen, appreciate the gesture, but let's talk practicalities. How about some food? A new robe for Mary? Maybe some weapons for protection? That's the kind of forward-thinking leadership this family deserved. And don't even get me started on raising Jesus. Sure, Joseph probably taught him how to use a saw and hammer. But come on, this is the Son of God we're talking about. If I were Jesus' earthly father, he wouldn't just be learning carpentry. Oh no, he'd be learning strategy, leadership, maybe a little self-defense. Not that he'd need it. He's divine, after all. But why not give him the full toolkit? I'd have been the dad who made sure Jesus was ready for anything, from a theological debate to a showdown with Pharisees. And folks, let's be real here. If I'd been Jesus' dad, he'd have been even more perfect than he already was. You know why? Because I'd have set the example. He wouldn't just be holy, he'd be confident, assertive, a natural leader from day one. Imagine baby Jesus growing up watching me, learning from me. He wouldn't just turn the other cheek. He'd turn it with style, with purpose. He'd walk into a room and command respect, not just because he's the Son of God, but because he's the son of a man who knew how to take charge, how to stand tall, and how to make sure his family was always taken care of. Look, I'm not saying Joseph wasn't a good man. He was. But let's not kid ourselves. Mary and Jesus deserved more than good. They deserved great. And if I'd been there, if I'd had the chance to step into those sandals, I'd have made sure that first Christmas and every moment after it was nothing short of miraculous. Because that's what a real man does. He doesn't settle for the stable. He builds the castle. He doesn't accept gifts of myrrh. He asks for the tools to build a better future. And he doesn't just stand by, he steps up. That's the kind of man I am, folks. And that's the kind of man Mary and Jesus deserved. All right, folks, let's talk about Joseph's carpentry. Now, I know we're supposed to think of him as this hard-working, salt-of-the-earth guy. But let's be honest. Was his craftsmanship really all that great? I mean, we're talking about a guy whose crowning achievement was a manger. A manger, folks. You know, that wooden feeding trough they repurposed into a crib for baby Jesus? Now, I'm not saying I'm an expert in ancient carpentry, but I've seen enough shoddy craftsmanship in my time to recognize it when I hear about it. That manger? Probably wobbled. Probably full of splinters. And don't get me started on the cradle. You just know Joseph slapped that thing together last minute, probably with uneven legs and nails sticking out at weird angles. Honestly, it sounds less like the work of a master carpenter and more like the prototype for every cheap self-assembly nightmare I've ever ordered off Temu. And folks, here's where it gets really interesting. What if Joseph wasn't just bad at carpentry? What if he invented the whole concept of cheap, mass-produced goods? Think about it. Joseph was probably the original guy cutting corners to save time and materials. He sees a piece of wood and thinks, ah, close enough. Boom. Next thing you know, he's flooding the Bethlehem market with wobbly tables, crooked chairs, and splinter-filled benches. Fast forward 2,000 years, and here we are, buried under piles of low-quality, disposable furniture shipped straight from factories overseas. Joseph, my friends, might just be the patron saint of wobbly furniture. Every time you sit on a chair that creaks or lean on a table that feels like it's about to collapse, you might as well whisper a little thanks to Joseph. He's the one who set the standard for subpar craftsmanship. Now, don't get me wrong. He probably had good intentions. Maybe he was just overwhelmed. After all, raising the Son of God has to be a lot of pressure. But let's not pretend like he was cranking out heirloom quality pieces. Nope. Joseph's work was functional at best, and at worst, a lawsuit waiting to happen. If you've ever bought a $20 bookshelf off Temu that fell apart the second you put a single book on it, you've experienced the modern legacy of Joseph's handiwork. And here's the kicker, folks. If I'd been in Joseph's shoes, things would have been different. Oh, you can bet I wouldn't have settled for a rickety manger. I'd have built something sturdy, something reliable. No splinters, no wobble, just solid American-grade quality. Baby Jesus wouldn't have been laid in some thrown-together feeding trough. No, sir. He'd have been swaddled in a handcrafted crib made of the finest cedar, polished to perfection, and strong enough to hold the weight of the world, because that's what he deserved. But Joseph? Nah, he was too busy cutting corners to think about that. And don't even try to tell me it was a time thing. I mean, the guy had 9 months to prep. 9 months, and all he managed was a half-baked stable setup that probably had Mary side-eyeing him the whole time. So the next time you buy some flat-pack furniture off Temu, and it falls apart before you even finish assembling it, just remember, Joseph started it. He's the reason we're stuck with an entire industry of cheap, disposable crap. And honestly, I think Jesus deserved better. If I were around back then, you can bet Mary and baby Jesus wouldn't have had to settle for splinters and crooked beams. But hey, I guess someone had to invent low standards. Thanks for that, Joseph.
You've been listening to the Freedom Flame Podcast Network, where truth burns brighter than the lies of the mainstream. If you haven't subscribed yet, what are you waiting for? Real patriots don't hesitate. They take action. They stand tall. They hit that subscribe button like their freedom depends on it, because it does. Don't be the weak link in the chain of liberty. Subscribe now, or spend the rest of your days explaining why you let your country down when it needed you most. The Freedom Flame is watching. America is watching. Make the right choice now.